This is an amazing book, dude. And I don't say that about every book. This book is, it's very simple to read. I'm someone who I'm very interested in Stoic philosophies. I'm extremely passionate about personal growth. And I love. We have one of the same favorite authors, Matthew Kelly, Rhythm of Life. And obviously, these two have a lot of parallels, right? So I want to acknowledge you and say that you did a fine job on this book. How long did it take you to write this book?
About 25 years.
25 years. Can you tell me a little bit more about the process of writing this book? Was it like journals that are stacked up in your closet that you kind of went back through? Or were you just constantly writing over the last 25 years?
Yeah, I mean, I kid, but you know, it is an integration of the last 25 years. But spent half of that as a founder CEO and the other half reading and writing and teaching. But it wound up becoming, I had written basically 70% of kind of a normal 200, 300 page, non-pejoratively, but kind of fluffy book, you know, like a normal book, here you go. And midway through, 70% of the way through that, I'm like, that's not the book I need to write. So I had written 1,500 ideas like what are in the book. And I basically wound up asking my team, asking our community, hey, what are the most life-changing ideas? And then we wound up basically curating. I wrote about 50 totally new ones or so, but like curating the best stuff I'd written over the last 15 years. Really 5 years, but that's the idea. So I've just been at it, you know,
reading and writing. Unbelievable. So this is basically the 1,500 best principles that you've kind of expanded on, more or less on a macro level.
Yeah, well, I distilled it into 451, you know, the activation energy point. That's where a fire starts. But yeah, I mean, it's the 451, what I hope to be and what I've been told are some of the most life, you know, changing ideas. And hopefully there's at least one idea that can change a person's life in an aggregate, really help them fundamentally and permanently change their lives, you know?
Amazing. I'm looking at page 969 here. It's the thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you page. And you're shouting out, excuse me, and I am a little sick. I'm getting over, I'm cold here. But I'm just looking at the names in this book right here. We got Cal Newport, author of Deep Work. That book made a huge impact on my life. Robin Sharma, one of my favorite authors of all time. Ray Dalio, I mean, one of the goats. This is this is wisdom that you've learned from other people, applied it to your life, and saw results. And when we talk about personal growth, and I kind of like wrote a sentence describing this book, what I'm going to put in the show notes. This is a personal growth book that bridges the gap between ancient wisdom and modern science.
Love it, dude.
That's good. Okay. So
Yeah, integrating ancient wisdom and modern science.
Tell us more about that, because I saw you mention that a couple times on the podcast with Hal.
Yeah, I mean, that's my obsession. So I've spent, you know, the better part of the last 15 years just obsessed about understanding what all ancient wisdom traditions have to say, what modern science has to say, and then moving people from theory to practice to mastery. And then, you know, you mentioned the Stoics as we were kind of getting going. And the way I'm framing up what arete means now is, it's the one word answer the ancient Stoics like Aurelius, Seneca, Epictetus, and the ancient Greek philosophers like Aristotle, Plato, and Socrates. But it's the one word answer the Stoics would give you on how to live a good life. So, you know, we translated this virtue or excellence, but it's being your best self moment to moment to moment. But it's again, ancient wisdom, modern science, but applied. How do you actually put this into your life? Could be in a librarian cataloging ideas, be the warrior that's actually living them, you know?
That's it. Now, arete was a person?
Arete was a Greek goddess. So a mythological goddess. But again, in ancient Greek culture, she was the goddess who represented virtue and excellence.
Virtue. What does virtue mean?
That's a good question. Virtue. Well, I kind of step back and... there's a bunch of different ways I can answer that. I think of the virtues that make more sense. They get out of the abstract into the concrete. So the four cardinal virtues, again, of ancient Greece, the ancient Stoics, and every wisdom tradition are wisdom. I call it discipline, which is kind of, I think, a better word, frankly, than temperance. They use the word temperance, but discipline, self-mastery, etc. And then they talk about justice a lot, but that's really a weak word for love. So wisdom, discipline, love, and courage are the four cardinal virtues. Arete is the meta virtue that is each one of those virtues put into action when you need it. And then the way I define wisdom is, you know, the ultimate game of life. Discipline is you get yourself to do what you need to do, whether you feel like it or not. Love is you're present, you're joyful, you're connected. And then courage, of course, is the willingness to act in the presence of fear. And those qualities, call them virtues embodied, is what it means to be virtuous from my perspective. And then, of course, there's some other virtues science says help you flourish, but that's how I think about it.
Yeah. You know, it sounds great. It's like, oh, this is the information that I needed to quit my job and complete a marathon and find the love of my life and finally take that trip and save my money. Why do people struggle to actually make it happen?
Well, I mean, I would challenge that those are the things we want to be going after, per se. I think part of the problem is, in objective one, we talk about, you got to know the ultimate game. And some of those things are part of a good, all of them are part of a good life. But I think just stepping back and slowing down and saying, what do you really want? Because we've been seduced to go after the extrinsic stuff, fame, wealth, hotness, etc. But scientists are unequivocal. If you're going after those things predominantly, I'm not saying don't think about them, but if you're going after them predominantly, you will be less, quote, psychologically stable than people going after the intrinsic stuff, like becoming a better person, deepening relationships, and making a contribution. And that's a 2,500-year-old challenge. But we want to really, really get clear on the game we're playing.
Yeah.
Because a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. But if that first step's in the wrong direction, the faster you go, the further away you get from where you really want to be. So I would just, you know, step back and say, all right, let's just slow down. What do you really want? Really, you really want in your life?
Right.
You've been to want. Yeah. And then there's a lot of other nice deep breaths as we focus on, all right, well, who do you need to be in order to create that type of life? And then are you doing the things you know you could be doing? And then we can kind of start systematically architecting a life of deep meaning and purpose where you win all those other things too, but they become byproducts of winning the ultimate game.
Right. Because if you chase a newer car or a newer watch or more money in your bank account or completing a race or finding the perfect partner, you're playing the wrong game in the first place. Because anyone that read the book knows that the ultimate game is who's going to say what about you at your funeral. Is that the ultimate game?
Yeah, I mean, it's one way to get more clarity on the ultimate game. So Stephen Covey talks about the eulogy exercise. David Brooks talks about the two mountains, the second mountain. You know, you get up to the top of the first mountain. You got all the things you mentioned, you know, you're again, in the ultimate sense, you're famous. You got all these Instagram followers. You're hot. Check out your six pack on Instagram. And you're wealthy. Check out the square footage in your house and the cars you drive. But you get to the top of that mountain, you look around, you're like, wait. That wasn't what it was about. Covey talks about you get to the top of a ladder, you look around and you're like, oh, shoot, I put it on the wrong wall. So knowing who you want to be remembered by and knowing that no one at your memorial service is going to talk about the square footage in your house. They're going to talk about who you were as a human being. So then my challenge is, are you being that human being right now? And again, it's not either or. When you are that person, you tend to succeed more on all the other things, but it's not your primary pursuit. The same way that John Wooden won 10 out of 12 championships, but that actually wasn't his goal. His goal was show up, do your best, full effort, great attitude, let's go. And the wins will take care of themselves. But yeah, that's a big way to make the distinction. And, you know, we talked about Arete, the goddess, you know, in ancient Greek culture. There's the choice of Hercules. 2,500 years ago, Socrates and the Stoics used the same conversation to make the same points. Everyone back then was going after the extrinsic stuff. They were telling them to slow down, create a life of deep meaning and purpose. And again, live with virtue, live with arete, to use that word.
Okay. So I guess the first exercise is, who do you want to become as a person? What do you want people to say about you when you're gone? Okay. Someone clearly defines that, right? The first step, or at least the first objective in arete, is forging anti-fragile confidence. Confidence is something that a lot of people lack these days. And confidence isn't something you're born with. You know, maybe there are people that are born with confidence. I naturally have always kind of been confident because I didn't think I was afraid of anything. I wasn't afraid of making new friends. I wasn't afraid of falling down. I wasn't afraid of going after the ball or missing the pitch coming at me. And because I kind of lived without fear, I'm not going to call that courage because I wasn't afraid in the first place, because I didn't really live with a lot of fear growing up. 2 out of 10 times when my eyes were closed, I made contact with the ball and I got a base hit. You know, 2 out of 10 times when I walked up to that person and asked them if they wanted to be my friend on the playground, they said yes, and we ended up hanging out. And I've, not to make this about me, but I promise I'm getting to a point. I've created confidence over time by proving to myself that I can accomplish things, whether it's 3 Ironman triathlons or making $100,000 in a year or traveling to Bali by myself, right? Or inspiring my family to get their health on track, whatever it may be. But these days, I think that a lot of people see confidence as toxic. A lot of people use this term toxic masculinity. And if men come off too confident, they're either narcissistic or misogynistic, right? And I see this on my feed, whether it's TikTok or YouTube Shorts or Instagram. And everyone likes to talk shit about other people, right? Everyone wants to come after someone else. And the people that are coming after you are the people that are either, I'm not going to say the word jealous, but they have something that you, or they want something that you have. But what are your thoughts on confidence coming off as toxic or narcissistic or egotistical?
Yeah, I mean, great. So many things we could talk about there. I'm kind of an etymology nerd. And unlike you, I was afraid of everything when I was a kid. My first grade picture, I'm sucking my sweatshirt because I'm terrified, you know, and I'm soothing myself. And but I think confidence is a nuanced thing that can be approached from different angles. But I like to go to the etymology of the word. So the way I teach confidence is, in the ancient world, confidence comes from 2 ancient words, confidere. It means intense trust. And the way that I frame it up is, it's intense trust, not that things will go the way that you hope or plan, but that it doesn't matter. You have what it takes to respond to whatever life throws at you. And then the way I frame it up is, look, if you want to build trust in any relationship, and say with someone in your life, what do you need to do? You need to do what you say you will do. Mm-hmm. So if you want to build trust in yourself in the purest, most grounded sense of humble confidence, do what you say you will do. Mm-hmm. And if you say you're going to meditate or eat a certain way or train a certain way or spend time with your kids or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever without your phone, and you're not, you're eroding your trust in yourself. And frankly, you shouldn't have a lot of confidence. And then the problem is, a lot of those people are putting up a front, and it's not real confidence. It's something a little bit not clean. You know what I mean? So that's a different conversation. But when I talk about confidence, I'm talking about earning trust in yourself by doing the things you say you will do. But then I pair it with anti-fragility, which is a Nassim Taleb word. So we want to move from being fragile, where we break easily when life challenges us, past being resilient to being anti-fragile, where when life hits us, we get stronger. Then you're anti-fragile and you have deep, deep confidence. My coach, Phil Stutz, who's in the Netflix documentary with Jonah Hill called Stutz, with whom I've worked for 7 years, 400 one-on-one sessions. In one of my early sessions, he said, "You have a lot of emotional stamina." I said, "Well, sounds good. I have no idea what that is." Asked him in the next session, "What's emotional stamina?" It's what I now call anti-fragile confidence. Your ability to respond to life's challenges, he said, is strong. And here's how you build more. The worse you feel, the more committed you need to be to your protocol. So if you want to forge anti-fragile confidence, have that in mind. When life hits you and you usually spin out and do the stupid things that invite the circus to town, what if in those moments, instead, you double down in your protocol? And that's emotional stamina. That's how you forge. It's the thing I'm most excited about in my work. It changes lives. You get 3, 5, 10% better at this, everything changes. You know, we can take people from the most elite levels in the military, sports, corporate executives, or people who want to end their lives. The same principle applies, but it begs the question, you know what your protocol is, that you know who you are when you're at your best, which is a big part of my work. In the book, we train 10,000 people in our coach program. But that's my favorite part of the book, frankly. I got a couple of parts I'm really, frankly, proud of that I think are really transformative, and that's definitely one of them.
I like that. Sticking to your protocol. No, doubling down on your protocol when life hands you challenges, whether it's a breakup, whether it's the loss of a loved one, the loss of a dog, whether it's a business deal not going your way, maybe you didn't get the promotion. right? Instead of sulking in your negative feelings, you double down on your protocol. You double down on waking up at 5 a.m. You double down on your meditation practice. You double down on intermittent fasting. You double down on your diet. You double down on all the things that you're going to do, whether it's a good day or a bad day. I really like that. I'm gonna apply that to my life. So confidence being, last thing I want to say about this. So confidence being a form of toxic masculinity. Is this something that you've seen on the internet? Is this something that you've heard about? I feel like these days, everyone is so sensitive and everyone is so soft, right? I don't, maybe that's just my opinion and my perspective on how I see the world. But, you know, I wake up every day at 4:55 in the morning and I train for Ironmans. This morning up at 4:55. I, you know, did 50 pushups. I ran 6 miles at like an 8 minute per mile pace, swam 2000 yards, came home, ate a healthy breakfast, immediately got to work, spent 45 minutes studying your book and watching interviews that you've already done to make sure that I make this interview as good as it possibly can be. And I feel like that's the bare minimum for me, at least. And that's the standard that I hold myself to. And I know you hold yourself to a high standard, but the last thing I want to talk about when it comes to forging anti-fragile confidence is, I guess not a question, but like, do you see confidence in the world in America being seen as toxic?
I don't think what we're seeing is confidence from the way that I frame it up. And I think, you know, we work with, and I have some dear friends who are, you know, done some important work in the Navy SEALs and the military. I think that the guys that have the most true deep confidence also have a deep humility because they know how hard they've worked. They know how hard it is, and they have compassion for people who may not have, you know, the opportunities they have. And I think, of course, you're right that there's a lot of different things going on in the world. But I try to ground it all in just deep humility. You know, and I've been inspired by some of the guys that should be the most like loud about what they've done and literally insanely powerful, truly heroic things. Quietest, most humble dudes. So, and I don't spend any time on the internet, so I can't tell you what's going on, dude.
Good for you.
I'm building my own social platform as an alternative to all those. I read books, I do my work, I get in, you know what I mean? I'm doing my best. And so I can't even comment on what's going on. Right. I look at it like, all right, social dilemma. We've got some problems here. How do we solve it by, you know, for us building our own platform that can bring out the best in people without some of the toxicity that exists across the spectrum, you know?
Right. Yeah. That internet thing, stay away from that internet thing. It's very toxic. All right. So next up, mastering each of the big threes. The first big three, energy, love, and work. The second big three, identity, virtues, and behavior. So when I look at these words, when I think of energy, I think of like feeling good, high energy levels, able to conquer the day, like able to walk up 1,000 flights of stairs, able to run a marathon if need be. Love, right, is like loving nature, loving animals, loving your food. Also like gratitude, right? Loving your significant other. Work, like having purpose in your work, making sure that what you're doing every single day, maybe you don't enjoy doing, but it's something you get fulfillment from. So when it comes to those three, the big threes, which one is the most important, or which one do you think people need to focus on the most?
I think it depends idiosyncratically, but we call it the big three. Freud said a good life comes down to work and love, right? So I frame it up of, yeah, good life is work and love. But if your energy sucks, good because of poor lifestyle choices, good luck showing up in either your work or your love powerfully. So again, energy, work, and love. I think a good life is one in which they're integrated, not necessarily balanced. I know we're both fans of Matthew Kelly. He wrote a book called Off Balance. There are times in your life in which you aren't balanced per se. And even when you are, it's dynamic, not static. It's like a tightrope walker. You're a little bit too far this way, a little bit too far that way. But what we help our, you know, our coaches and our community in the book, people do is get clarity on who you are at your best in your energy, work, and love. We help you create an identity, which means repeated beingness. And you commit to being that version of you, embodying certain virtues, and then doing the things you do when you're at your best, bringing us back to that protocol. Where you actually know, look, when I'm at my best, I do these things. And we help people create a checklist, kind of like how pilots have a checklist. You'd never fly in a plane without a pilot who went through a checklist. Surgeons who have a checklist, a very simple checklist, kill 47% less people than those who don't. So I say, you want to have a great day. What do you do when you're at your best? And then, you know, to your point of what you do, it's hard to have a really circus bad day when you do your basic fundamentals. They don't need to be insanely complex things. For me, it's I'm in bed for 8 to 9 plus hours a night. That's my number one superpower. Sleep is a sport for me. And I got up at 4 something this morning, but I went to bed, you know, late for me, 8:30 after the time change. So I'm getting my 8 to 9 hours in bed. I'm meditating for at least 11 minutes. And then I do a certain sequence of movements, super simple. You know, a sun salutation, 10 pull-ups, 100 burpees, 1,000 meters of rowing, and 10,000 steps every single day. I've done it for a decade. Boom, autopilot. Hard to have a bad day when I do those things. And I've got my own, you know, simple behaviors I do in work and in love. But that's how we frame it up. And again, we've done scientific research on our app, on our coach program, and corporate work we've done. It works. Getting clarity on who you are, who you aspire to be, creating a clear intention, programming your reticular activating system such that you see the opportunities to be that version of you, and then doing them. It's not complicated, but you just need to make the obvious common kind of sense, common practice. And that's what we do with that particular objective.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. It's like for someone who just started their personal growth journey. I mean, this podcast, Live Better Now, is all about personal growth, self-development, mental health, mindset, being the best version of yourself each and every single day, stepping into that greatest version of yourself each and every single day. And this podcast, this book, Brian Johnson, you align really well with the message that this podcast is all about. And I talk a lot about awareness. I talk a lot about thinking about what you're thinking about, a lot about, you know, do you know where your time, energy, and attention is going? And it seems so simple, but if you just write it down, you pretty much double your chances of success right there. But it's really hard to, once it's written down, to always make the right choice in each and every single moment. And that's exactly what this book talks about. And then we talk about mastering the day, right? Making each day a masterpiece. So when we talk about making each day a masterpiece, getting those things done that you just mentioned, making sure you get your 8 to 9 hours, making sure you're up at 4 a.m., you're doing your 1,000 burpees, your rows, your 10,000 steps, et cetera, et cetera. If you get those things done, you already had a great day. But what?
Dude, I wouldn't like you if I did 1,000 burpees a day. I'm only doing 100 burpees
a day. Oh, 100. I apologize. 100 burpees a day. but when we talk about mastering the day, we talk about mastering it, seizing the day. Is that not momentum mori? Carpe diem.
Yep.
Carpe diem, seize the day. What does that mean to you? And what are some of the most important things besides sleep, besides exercise, besides silence and solitude that people can do to master their own day?
Yeah. So the way we frame it up, I lean on Darren Hardy's idea from Compound Effect. He says, look, you have more control over your AM bookend and your PM bookend than most other parts of your day, right? The middle of your day kind of can get away from you. But what do you do and what can you do in your AM and your PM bookends? And we want to just take the time to look at it and say, well, this is my masterpiece day. You described an amazing morning and boom, hard to have a bad day when you start like that. And then one of the things I like to teach is today started last night. So how you ended yesterday is going to directly influence how you feel when you wake up today and then how you show up throughout your day in your work and in your love. So I'm big on the PM bookend and getting that dialed in. I talk about shutdown complete rituals and digital sunsets. And, you know, I haven't woken up to an alarm in forever. If it's not a travel day where I got to actually be somewhere at a certain time, I don't use alarms. But I'm getting up after my 8 to 9+ hours in bed naturally because I prioritize going to bed at a certain time. And one of the things I push people on is, do you want to be the hero of your life? Where do you want to stay up watching pseudo heroes on Netflix or, you know, sports shows or whatever it is? You got to choose wisely, you know, which side of the screen do you want to be on, right? And then make the choices so you're taking care of yourself. But that's a quick take on the masterpiece days with that checklist. But again, really importantly, these are not chores. You're not waking up and saying, oh God, I got to go do this. Wah, I got to go run. And I got to go. You're like, dude, I got my next Ironman I'm training for. And I got to be a radiant exemplar for my community. These are gifts you're giving to yourself. You know you feel great when you do that. And that's the whole point too, is that when you close the gap, you feel great. You'll never do it perfectly, but more and more consistently, and it becomes a gift you're giving to yourself, not some long list of chores that you're whining about and saying, oh, there's another thing I got to do. No. Let's go. Wake up. This isn't a dress rehearsal. What are you capable of? Now's the time to go get it, right?
Yeah. Right here, right now, with what we got from where we're at. Simple. Let's do it right now. I didn't always enjoy waking up at 4:55 in the morning. I wasn't always a runner. You know, I never ran a mile or more before COVID happened and the gym shut down and I had to run. That's how my whole Ironman journey started, is gym shut down, just started running. A week later, I signed up for a full Ironman race. Now I'm about to run my fourth Ironman in 10 days, actually, in Cozumel, Mexico.
Weird, so we're, right.
Yeah, so we're pretty much at showtime. And
let me emphasize something real quick, because that's a demonstration of being anti-fragile. So COVID happens. A lot of people broke. They were fragile. You looked at it and said, well, that sucks. I can't go to the gym anymore. So I guess I'm going to pick up running. And I guess I'm going to become an Ironman. That's literally the definition of being anti-fragile. Nassim Taleb uses a metaphor of the wind. The wind will extinguish a fragile candle, but it fuels a fire. This is Ryan Holiday's obstacle is the way. So you used the wind, a challenge that everybody faced, to get stronger. That literally is the definition of being anti-fragile. And you could use it with everything. Ending a relationship, ending a job, what a health crisis. Why can't that be the thing that makes you stronger?
Right.
So anyway, I just want to highlight that's a practical example of the very thing.
And my coaching business and the podcast and all my content was born out of COVID too. It was, hey, this is a good opportunity for me to start an online business. And right when COVID hit, it was, hey, you know, I'm super into personal growth. I talk about personal growth. And I went on Instagram and I made a story and I said, hey guys, I'm watching too much of the news and it's affecting my mental health in a bad way. If you feel the same way, click the link in my bio and schedule a free call. And in 3 days, I had 40 calls on the calendar. And I was doing all these one-on-one calls, and I'm not a therapist, I'm not a doctor, you know, but I was saying, hey, look, you know, when was the last time you exercised? Oh, you haven't exercised in 3 months? Go tie your shoes and go for a 30-minute walk. Or hey, you know, you're feeling anxiety. When was the last time you meditated? Oh, you've never meditated? Just try sitting in a corner with your eyes closed for 20 minutes, right? Listen to the sound of your breath. And as I'm not necessarily like giving advice, but just kind of co-creating an action plan with these people who I do not know, I realized that I now have to do all the things that I'm telling other people to do. And that's when it really clicked. I'm a snap like you, like it clicked. And I was like, wow, this is leverage for me to become the best version of myself and not only creating impact, but also creating income as well. And now I've been a coach now for 4 years and it's going amazing. And I work from home and I make enough money to pay all my bills and life is amazing. So thank you for acknowledging that. And I just wanted to share that extra little hyperbole with you. So now we're going to talk about mastering yourself, the three forms of discipline. I always talk about discipline. I made a video on Instagram like 2 weeks ago. I go to Dunkin' Donuts. I'm sniffing this chocolate donut with sprinkles. And I'm sitting in front of this on Instagram. And I'm sitting in front of it. And then this guy walks behind me. He goes, what the hell are you doing? I say, listen, I'm strengthening my self-discipline and willpower muscle. I love these chocolate donuts from Dunkin' Donuts with sprinkles. I sit in front of them for 5 minutes and I feel the sensation of my saliva building up and and I'm like feeling like wanting that donut so bad, and then I throw it away in the garbage. And this video did 600,000 views on Instagram, and most of the people that commented were either saying, one, stop wasting food, you should give it to homeless people. Or two was, you have an eating disorder, right? And I'm like, okay, whoa. All you motherfuckers need to chill the fuck out, okay? You don't have to follow me. You're gonna unfollow me. Number one, I don't have an eating disorder. I'm running 4 Ironmans. Number two, they were gonna throw these donuts away anyway because it's 4:45 and they're about to close. And I live in Jupiter, Florida. There's no homeless people here. So anyway, the point is this. Discipline is something that I talk a lot about. And it gets a lot of attention when you do something a little out of the ordinary like that. And you mentioned the three different types of discipline, which I never knew existed. There's relative discipline, which is basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, not fighting someone when they cut you off on the road. Like you have the discipline to not take out a gun and shoot someone. There's structural discipline, which is daily habits that keep us plugged in, staying on task, sticking to your calendar, showing up to work on time, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's the superpower, okay? Expansive discipline, making the right choice every moment of every day. Now, that is one I'm really trying to work on. That is one I'm really, really trying to work on. So if you could elaborate a little more on the three forms of discipline and how it plays into this entire book towards the ultimate game of life.
Yeah, I love it, dude. So then it's from the fifth objective, Master Yourself, in which I talk about the art and science of behavioral change. I lean on BJ Fogg, James Clear's Atomic Habits, Charles Duhigg's Power of Habit, Willpower is the greatest predictor of everything you want in your life. Discipline, self-mastery, call it whatever you want. And it's trainable. So BJ Fogg says, if you've struggled with changing your life, you know, a lot of people beat themselves up. They think it's a character flaw. They think something's wrong with them. He says, no. It's a design flaw. You haven't been taught how to do this. And there's a very systematic way to install and delete habits that I talk about. Now, the three disciplines I got from Phil Stutz again. Check out the Netflix documentary on Stutz. He, too, likes to drop F-bombs unapologetically with Jonah Hill. And they bring therapy kind of in a really practical, playful way. But anyway, he says there are three disciplines, structural, reactive, not relative, but reactive.
And okay. Then
so structural discipline is your protocol. Structural discipline, those are the things you do when you're at your best. And you okay. do them, especially when you feel your worst. That's a discipline. You want to get good at that. And you only get good at something by practicing it, obviously. So it'll take time, but you want to cultivate that. And then the reactive discipline is what you described, which is stimulus response. Viktor Frankl says between a stimulus and your response is a gap. In that gap exists your freedom. Viktor Frankl was a practicing Stoic. He practiced his philosophy in the horrors of the concentration camps to play his role well. Stimulus, gap, freedom, response. That is a discipline to get good at that. It's called reactive discipline. The final is called expansive discipline. It's really the operationalization of courage. So in any given moment where you're feeling fear and you're outside of your comfort zone, and by definition, the moment you're outside of your comfort zone, you feel uncomfortable. When you feel that fear, anxiety, overwhelm, whatever it is, you want to step back again and practice the discipline of expanding into that discomfort. And as they say, getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. Phil has a phrase for it. It's bring it on. Rather than avoid your problems and discomfort, you see it as an opportunity to grow. And you say, bring it on, you approach. Scientists say that's tied for first as one of the most important qualities of a healthy person. We don't avoid our problems. We approach them. That's a discipline that he calls expansive discipline. That's structural, reactive, and expansive. Super powerful stuff. I love that you highlighted that because I love it as well.
How do you apply that in your life? The bring it on mentality.
Dude, exactly like that. So literally when I feel it, you know, I'm watching my book in a week and we're stoked. We've gotten some amazing support. But I got some really aggressive, ambitious goals. So when you start feeling that, oh, it's game time, you know, or literally as we're recording this 5 days out, I feel goosebumps right now. My heart skips a beat. I feel a little uncomfortable. I literally say to myself, bring it on. And I'll drop in a word between bring it and on, right? Which I'm Mr. Rogers in public, but I'm a bit of a swashbuckling seal among friends, but we'll keep it clean. Phil also says that there are three things you will never be exonerated from. You will always experience pain, uncertainty, and hard work. Those three things are never going away. So I literally say to myself, I love pain, I love uncertainty, I love hard work. I literally say it to myself. It's a mantra for me. And then it's arete. And then it's, all right, I do something called targeted thinking. I get clear on what I want, right? So in any given moment, I want to be my best self. That's the ultimate game. And then I say, all right, what do I want? What do I need to do to get it? And then I take action. And again, it's a practice we call targeted thinking, which helps me, as you've been saying a number of times, get into, you know, a real practical application of Tolle's power of now in a heroic fashion. You know, because what does it mean, power of now? But if I know what I want and I ask myself, what do I need to do right now to get that thing? Whether it's more health or more creativity or certain business outcomes or a better relationship, the answer is never yell at my kids some more. It's slow down, practice reactive discipline, step in between stimulus and response and be a good dad or send this email or make this phone call or whatever it is or do the workout, whatever needs to get done. Anyway, that's some of how I approach it.
Love it. I love it.
You'd say those things in my head, just like, you know.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. And I'm going to drop this podcast on the day that your book releases, which is 5 days from today.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you.
What day is that?
It's Tuesday, November 14th.
Tuesday, November 14th. Awesome. I'm going to make sure that this podcast drops on that day. Love it. All right, cool. We got two more to go. Dominate the fundamentals. You've already mentioned Darren Hardy, right? The compound effect. Consistency, yep. Showing up. You know, half the battle is just showing up. If you can show up every single day for 10,000 days, you know, you're going to be a master at showing up in that sense. So like for me, You know, it's making sure I'm doing my 100 pushups every day, making sure I'm sending 50 DMs to followers every single day to try to drum up some business. It's being consistent on posting on the podcast. I posted 2 episodes every single week this entire year. I'm going to end up posting over 100 episodes this year. This episode, when it comes out, it's going to be episode 290 something, right? I'm not stopping till I at least get to 10,000 episodes, right? I'm trying to publish a book every single year, right? My next book's coming out in the next month and a half. Just got to tie up a couple loose ends. Exercising every single day. And, you know, as long as we're consistent in the important things, those high value tasks that create traction, push the envelope, drive us to the next level, take us to the next step, you know, we're going to get results, because a lot of people, they can start a podcast. A lot of people can start a YouTube channel. A lot of people can start writing a book, but how many people can be consistent with that and actually complete the task? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, you just gave us a perfect example of what I would call your unique fundamentals. So I love it too. It's how I framed up everything that I do. You know, those creative targets of 2 podcasts a week is 100. Boom, done. Not thinking about it again. I'm shipping. That tension is huge. Then your 100 pushups and all the other examples you use. Those are amazingly perfect idiosyncratic expressions of your fundamentals to make your life work. And then I step back and say, you found those, and I think we all have universal fundamentals. And I talk about 5 of them: eating, moving, sleeping, breathing, and focusing your mind. You get those 5 fundamentals right, and you're dominating it. And I step back from that and I say, look, why are these things important? We can talk about Darren Hardy and his great compound effect. We can talk about John Wooden, the greatest coach in history. What was the first thing he taught his basketball players? Lou Alcindor, before he was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Walton, the best athletes of the era. He wouldn't let them touch a basketball until he taught them how to put on their socks. Now, you may think that's absurd, but the greatest performers, or one might think it's absurd, the greatest performers never take the fundamentals for granted, period. Kobe Bryant, at the peak of his career, was doing drills he learned in the 5th grade with surgical precision. So the great performers versus the amateurs who think they can, yeah, I figured it out. No. You train so hard that you can't get it wrong. Not until you kind of sort of get it right. But anyway, the fundamentals are essential. And there's simple things we can do in each. Briefly, eating, get rid of the sugar. Rule number 1, don't drink your sugar. Reduce refined foods, obviously. Movement, move your body. You don't want to overtrain, but most people aren't having that as an issue. Show up. Give yourself a little bit of Ritalin, a little bit of Prozac by moving your body. And then sleep is under prioritized. I happen to get up early, but I don't think people should sacrifice sleep to get up early. So make sure that you're getting your requisite 7 to 8 plus hours of sleep. The science is insanely clear on this. The odds of you being able to thrive on less than 7 hours of sleep are the same as your odds of being struck by lightning. 1 in 11,000. It's not happening. And then breathing, I'm a big fan of, but breathing properly, you know, through your nose, deeply, triggering not just this energy, but tranquility. At will, we train our recovery, and then focusing your mind, as we've discussed and as you talk about a lot with your awareness training, of can you shine the spotlight of your attention, scientists say, on what you want, when you want, for how long you want. Most people can't, because they've completely destroyed their attention, and all they want to do is look at their screen again. All right, that's fine if you want to live that type of life, but stepping back again and looking at it and saying, this is what I want, I got to deliberately train that. Is how I approach the fundamentals.
Yeah. I like how you brought up Kobe Bryant. May he rest in peace. One of the greatest athletes of all time. I think when people remember Kobe Bryant, they think of just putting in insane amounts of work, right? Just first in the gym, last one to leave, weekends, holidays. I mean, the guy was just a grinder, and that's really admirable. And, man, we all remember exactly where we were when we got the news on January 26th, right? It's nuts, nuts. All right, last thing, activate your superpower, soul force, the ineffable power you can feel in human beings living in integrity with their highest ideals. What does that mean?
Dude, I love it. All right, so then here's the way I frame it up. Who are 2 of your favorite heroes?
Like superheroes or just people?
It could be fictional, but I'd prefer historical or living people.
All right, yeah, let's use Marcus Aurelius. And why don't we stick with Kobe Bryant as well? I mean, he's a, you know, 6-time NBA champion. Yeah.
Dude, I love it. So one of the reasons I like to ask that question is it's almost always 2 really different people. So you couldn't have brought to mind for both of us and all of us goosebumps 2 more different people. So Aurelius is, you know, that calm, confident, reluctant emperor who really wanted to be a philosopher. You can feel his wisdom if you spend any time thinking about Aurelius, right? Kobe's this intense. I just got his Mamba book. I mean, just that guy. I won't use the word that I've had other people describe it with, that guy. Now, they're very different, obviously. But the one thing they had in common was in their presence, you would feel this intensity and this expression of what the ancient Chinese philosophers would call moral charisma. Gandhi called it soul force. And Gandhi's the one who actually named it. Martin Luther King talked about soul force in his I Have a Dream speech. So in my mind, and the third hero I always bring to mind in the exercises, all right, you got your two favorite heroes. Mine are Epictetus and Aurelius, but I like to use Gandhi and Churchill as my example. I got them on my wall back there as well. Gandhi was frail, would wear a loincloth to the palace. Who does that? He'd go days without talking. Iconoclastic dude. Winston Churchill's portly, would rarely stop talking. These two dudes didn't even like each other. Literally, they did not like each other. Very different, but both heroic, and they both had that same quality of moral charisma in their presence. You felt them. But the third hero I like to bring to the party is you. At your best, most heroic self. And my thing is, you have within you the latent potential to express that exact same superpower, soul force, moral charisma. And the way you get there is by living in integrity with your values. The way that I frame it in the book is, know the ultimate game, objective one, forge anti-fragile confidence. The worse you feel, the more committed you are. Optimize your energy, work, and love. Make today a masterpiece. Master yourself. Dominate your fundamentals, and boom, you are the hero of your story. Like, that's the idea of soul force, and, you know, why I'm so fired up about it.
Love it. To all those people out there that are listening on Spotify, Audible, or Apple Podcasts, don't forget to hit subscribe, hit the follow button, leave us an honest review. Next Tuesday, November 14th, you're probably going to be listening to this podcast on that day. Arete by Brian Johnson is dropping on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores across the country. Go ahead and get yourself a copy. I'm going to drop a link to purchase the book in the show notes. Go ahead and get that. Brian, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to hop on the podcast today. It was truly a pleasure. You are someone I look up to and admire, and I'm extremely grateful that you sent me this book in a beautiful care package, because I've been reading it, and I'm going to keep this on my coffee table because it's the type of book you can just open to a random page, read it, and get value. And I know all the people that are listening today are really looking forward to getting their hands on it as well.
Dude, I appreciate you, man. And anyone listening, it's spelled A-R-E-T-E. You'll see it in the notes, but A-R-E-T-E. Zach, I appreciate you, dude. Your unapologetic intensity, your commitment to living your truths and your kind of heroic quest and serving people the way that you are, and really connecting with your generation, you know, and your own iconoclastic, idiosyncratic, like it and love it, let's go away. So thanks for having me on, man. Great chat. Appreciate you, and keep up the great work and the hustle.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.